Hello, everyone. Welcome to Talking Logistics, where we have conversations with thought leaders and newsmakers in the supply chain logistics industry. It's my great pleasure to welcome today's program, Gordon Fisher, who's Group Vice President, Product Management at E2Open. And today we're going to talk about operational resilience in action, a practical guide for supply chain leaders. So how resilient is your supply chain? So the honest answer for many companies, especially which they learned the hard way after the COVID pandemic, is that their supply chains are not very resilient at all. That is that they're not able to adapt and recover from disruptions, very quickly or very effectively. So that is why over the past few years, enabling supply chain resilience has become a priority, for many companies, especially those with global operations. What actions are companies taking to make their supply chains more resilient? What does operational resilience mean, and what does it look like in action? Well, those are some of the questions we're going to address in today's episode, and it's great to have Gordon on the program to share his insights and advice on this topic. So, Gordon, welcome to the program.
All right, thanks. I have actually watched a lot of your podcast, so I'm excited to be here, Adrian. Thank you for inviting me. This is great.
No, it's great. Great to have you.
So on operational resilience, this is, let's talk about what actions we've seen from some of our customers, our clients, what actions they're taking. And I would kind of categorize those into three big buckets. So, and it's both post-pandemic as well as just the continuous, let's say, onslaught of different changes that's happening, trade wars, conflicts throughout, climate change, weather events, et cetera. So the first thing they've been doing is strengthening their networks and connectivity. So a lot of the supply chain goes outside your four walls. You need to be able to connect to your logistics providers, your suppliers, possibly end-tier suppliers all the way down, as well as just different aspects of your organization. So that's kind of strengthening the networks and connectivity has been one thing that we've seen our clients kind of prioritize. The next one is once you've got that network, that connectivity, the data flowing through is how do you get that end-to-end visibility and alerting? A classic kind of on both this first and second point is, let's say a supplier is, you're doing inbound logistics from Asia to the US. How do you get the information from that supplier so you know when it's going to hit the shore? Right, that's a challenge. So you strengthen your networks, you get the data, and then you got to get that end-to-end visibility and alerting around it because you always want to manage by exception. Third one would be, once I have all that and I have kind of that end-to-end visibility, how do I adopt some sort of intelligent orchestration, intelligent resolution tools? So how can I bring together all those different parties when something goes wrong, right? So I've got the data, I can alert on it, I know something's wrong. How can I get those parties together to actually achieve a resolution to the problem that is there? And that, we use a lot of words, there's resilience, there's anti-fragility, sometimes there's command center around all of this stuff, but it really is, how do I... Operational resilience is kind of how do I respond to that near term, real time, maybe right time interrupts.
Yeah, no, I think those are great. Those are all great points. So if maybe to paraphrase a little bit, or just to make sure I heard everything right. So really, the first step, which I saw as well, is really making sure that you're able to get data and information from your external trading partners, whether it's your carriers, your suppliers. And I think where a lot of companies saw a lot of the black holes was particularly with, the long tail of their trading partners, right? Those smaller mid-sized carriers and suppliers, end-tier suppliers. So as they were trying, particularly during COVID, as they were trying to, figure out, where is their supply, trying to figure out different alternate routes and so forth, that's where they were having a lot of challenges because they didn't have that connectivity and that data. But I think as you talked about, number one is getting that data or having that connectivity. Number two is then having the capability to the system understand or having a platform that understands, hey, there's a exception that's going to there's an exception that's occurring and being able to alert to that so that you're able to then focus your attention on where the problems actually are rather than just, looking at all the data
Correct.
Coming in, really focusing in on those areas that look to be problematic. And then third is, and I think this is where that, companies talk a lot about visibility, but visibility is not enough. You actually have to do something with that data, that intelligence, that information to, take some action to, resolve the disruption. Again, and then that's really the path to creating a more, resilient, supply chain. So you mentioned operational resilience and that kind of being an aspect of that. So that kind of suggests that, that different levels or categories of resilience. I mean, is that the case? And I mean, can you expand a little bit more on what operational resilience means and how does it differ from the other types of resilience?
Absolutely. Accenture has come out with some different phases of resilience. And so this is where we like to use the word operational resilience, given some of those definitions. So the first one would be strategic resilience. And this is really your long-term high-level resilience. You're seeing some of this with multi-sourcing suppliers. Right. So I had a supply bottleneck with one supplier. I now want multi-regions. Right. We've seen China going to Vietnam. We've seen some other manufacturers moving manufacturing locations into Mexico. So that's kind of your strategic, your network design. There's a lot of similarities there, but it's a much more high level. Right. So how do you build your organization for that kind of strategic resilience? Usually there's a lot more investment in there too. Right. So, one other thing that I will add in there is, let's say, product engineering. So at that strategic level, maybe there's different ways I can build my product so that I can use different parts within that product. You then, and this is all kind of a continuum, I would say, across strategic, tactical, and operational resilience. And it kind of goes from that high level to the low level, from very, let's say, proactive, maybe year-long planning to a little bit more reactive. Oh my gosh, there's a storm or, something has happened. So middle level, we get into that kind of tactical resilience. And this is where you might get scenario planning. You might have inventory policies. So how much buffer stock do you want to keep in certain regions? Do you want to stockpile a lot or a little? And then we kind of get into the operational resilience, where it's really rapid decision making, coordinated actions across the ecosystem from your partners, your forwarders, maybe your own logistics department. And you want to make sure that those essential business operations can continue with minimal impact to the business. So again, you want to detect those issues, understand the impact, which is key, and then act to resolve them. And that's really the operational resilience kind of aspect. And here I would say for the operational resilience, something may be late, but maybe you've already stockpiled goods, so it doesn't really impact you satisfying the demand. Maybe you don't want to expedite because another day or two is fine due to the business, right? Or maybe you mispredicted the demand and you don't need to expedite. Whereas other times, maybe there's a very critical thing and you need to reroute. Maybe you need to do inventory rebalancing. So that's all the stuff on operational resilience. How do I respond to that action really, really quickly and rapidly?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And a couple of things you said really struck me. I mean, when you're going back to the strategic type of resilience, I mean, another example I think more recent is what's happening with Baxter and the IV fluids, where 60% of the IV fluids are manufactured there in North Carolina, and of course it got hit by the hurricane and disrupted operations there. So when you're thinking about okay, a strategic type of resilience is maybe having manufacturing plants, in at least in one other location to kind of minimize that risk, if you will, that potential for disruption. But to your point, those are like network level type of decisions. That's a lot of capital investment will be required. Those are year long, multiple year types of decisions. The other thing that you said that might be interesting, that might be an interesting topic for a different episode, is really thinking about resilience from a product design standpoint, right? So being able to design products for resiliency, meaning, like you said, being able to swap out different parts and different components, particularly if they're over the counter, readily available components, rather than relying on, let's say, proprietary design parts that, might be single sourced. So really thinking about resilience all the way down to the product design level. But getting back to the operational resilience, I mean, what does that look like in action? I mean, can you give some examples?
Absolutely. And so this is the I'll start with a couple of, let's say, broad use cases on where we see some of our clients kind of want to focus on those operational resilience aspects, solutions. And I'll start with, so kind of like use case one would be that, where's my stuff? Is it late? And you're kind of dealing with those almost finished goods. It's a little bit more, maybe it's stock transfers amongst your network, but you've got something and you're saying, where is it? Is it late? So what? And the so what here is probably inventory and kind of that impact analysis. Am I short on my inventory? Can I satisfy the demand? And then if I can't satisfy the demand, we then get into the so what, now what? So I can't do it. That means I'm going to be short. What do I want to do? Do I want to prioritize one customer over another customer? Do I want to give everyone a piece of it? And that's very, that can, we see a lot of these problems caused by port delays, supplier shortages, unforeseen demand. But on a lot of this is where I have goods that I just need to get to the right parties. A different use case here might, similar to use case one, in that it's probably logistics-oriented shortages, is what if I need those goods to do a factory run? And here's where we get into, let's say, some of those alternate parts, because I may be able to change what I do in my manufacturing to meet a delay, right? Maybe I do a different run and I wait, right? Maybe do I have enough space in my warehouse to hold the things that are coming in, right? So same sort of problem, but the resolutions there to the same event may be very different. And then I would say a third use case that we've seen come up more, different industry, would be things, let's say you're assembling a windmill, you're assembling a cell tower, or you need to do a repair at an offshore oil site. There's this concept of, I need a very defined set of goods, almost like a kit of goods that need to be delivered to a certain place. And I don't even want, you know, I may not expedite, right? If something's late, I may choose to de-expedite some of the deliveries because I don't want them sitting out at some remote site without all the other things that need to happen. So the same events can all come together. And then depending on what business you're in, what industry you're in, you're going to want to use that, you know, intelligent resolution, workflows, orchestration to determine how do I resolve this problem? And then I'll touch on another thing that we see, a key part of a lot of the operational resilience. And this is where my shorthand for that is, like, the so what, now what? And then coming out of that is, what about next time? Right? And so that's the, if I have my so what, I get into the now what. And this is where, you know, there are tool sets that you can use to kind of say, here's what the system recommends. And so I'm going to go a little bit deep on kind of the different kinds of resolution. Now that we say, okay, how do I resolve it? One may just be send it to an expert. When I see this type of problem, send it to an expert. That expert knows what's going to happen. That doesn't scale very well. And the next step would be, I want somebody to run it as a playbook or a three-ring binder type of concept, right? So when I see these problems, I have a playbook that I want to execute. It's of this type. Please go run it. And you want to make sure at that point that the playbook is run accordingly. Another step may be, okay, how do I get it out of people and just run it, let's say, from a machine? And that's going to be a heuristic approach. And then we've seen a lot with AI. So that's our machine learning. Maybe it's a statistical AI, maybe it's a generative AI. But then how do I resolve it? And the analogy I've started to use with a lot of our clients is, if you remember spam detection, if we go back many years, and that's dating me, you can see a couple of grays in my beard here. If you go back, originally when spam detection came in, you wouldn't trust it. It would still be coming in, you'd mark it as spam, and you'd still kind of review it. At a certain point, the spam algorithms got good enough that I don't even look at it until someone says, I sent you this and I missed it. So that's where I think on this, whether it's heuristics, AI machine learning, the generative AI type, for all of the resolution workflows learning from the past, that's where we're going. And we're in the early days, kind of like spam detection. So in that resolution framework that you want to execute to be more resilient, you bring that across.
Yeah, you know, I think you're right. I mean, I think I was going to ask, as you were talking there, and then you kind of read my mind and started talking about it. Was I was going to ask? This seems like, when you ran through those different scenarios, I mean, it just exemplifies, yes, yet once again, how many variables are involved in supply chain management, right? And depending on your industry, what product you're producing, your supply chain, all that kind of stuff. When something happens, I mean, there's so many different factors that you have to consider to determine what is the quote unquote right decision or the right action to take. And so my question was going to be, this seems kind of the right area, again, where AI, machine learning, some of these newer technologies come into play, because when you think about all the different permutations and all different variables involved, what could take a person, a few hours to run through the different scenarios or different actions they could possibly take, a system can, do that in seconds, if not only minutes. To your last point, I think this is an area that I'm seeing. I think this whole area of AI and Gen AI and some of these more automated or autonomous processes taking place is, you're right, we're going through an evolution here. And I think what we're going to see, and we're seeing this already, is kind of this human in the loop approach, right? So the system is going to suggest a course of action. It's going to come up with the analysis, could suggest a course of action, but then there's still going to be a human in the loop that's going to review it and say, yeah, that makes sense, and then hit go execute. And then, to your point, I think over time, if that human in the loop says, 99.99% of the time, I'm just clicking that go do it button, now you've built the trust in the system to say, you know what? For these types of scenarios, just let it run, because there's no reason for me to have to look at it again. Because for the past year, all I've been doing is click go, because I've been happy and satisfied with that course of action. So I think that's what we'll ultimately get, right?
And I'll also say, also flip it on the negative side. If the system keeps recommending something and the human in the loop says, no, I'm going to do it this way, that should highlight some sort of anomaly to say, well, was that the right choice? Right? Because maybe the system is recommending something wrong. And that's where we get that feedback loop. So we want a tool and a solution that can capture what that ultimate action was so that we can go back and practice, right? Because all these disruptions will keep happening, right? The pandemic kind of shone a light on, look, I've been working in supply chain for a while. You have pre-pandemic, when someone said, what do? I work in supply chain. They said, what's that? They don't really do that anymore, right? And we see it on the news all the time. More and more of these disruptions happen. And really, how are you going to solve those disruptions? And the challenge from my perspective comes really when you go broad, that end tier, right? Because if you can solve some of these within your four walls, great. You probably have a system to do all this. But what happens when you're outsourcing your logistics, outsourcing your manufacturing, right? You've got all the trade laws that are coming in and different regulations. So what happens when you need, your customs broker to do something for you? Having a tool that can run across that and get those parties aligned to get a resolution and then practice it over and over, right? Like, you've got special teams in sports that practice moves that they may never need. But then on that one game day where they really need it, they practice it so much that they can just execute it. So that's kind of where all of the operational resilience with a resolution framework is really going.
I agree. So at the end of the day, if I need to make the business case to my CEO and CFO that we need to invest in improving our operational resilience, I mean, what benefits should I highlight? In short, what's my answer to why should we do this?
All right. So on this one, I got th three points. So number one, by investing in operational resilience, you're going to minimize your financial impact from any of the disruptions. So, and that's a very, let's say, short-term thing. Number two, you're going to increase your agility and time to market. And then number three, and I'll go back and touch on these. On number three, long-term savings via efficiency, preparedness, all that kind of learning. Right. So that's a little bit more of a strategic play. But for the first one, right, just minimizing the financial impact. If you have end-to-end visibility across, let's just focus on your logistics side, you may be able to fundamentally say, hey, I don't have to expedite as much anymore. I get more visibility. I trust that this thing is going to be there, this item, so I'm not going to expedite. Whereas before you did. So you may have a very, impact to the business. You can lower your expedite cost just with getting some end-to-end visibility and some process around it. And then a lot of, and I think you touched on this before, a lot of the CEOs, CFOs are kind of thinking about their supply chain practice as, can I no longer cost center? Can I make this a competitive advantage? So the more end-to-end you get, the more kind of interactions with your end tier, all of a sudden you can deliver value when your competitors might be struggling. So because you've invested, because you've practiced these plays, you can do something that your competitors can't, which results in better brand loyalty, customer sat, increased market share, et cetera. So that's kind of number two. The agility and speed to market has a lot of add-on effects that might be, let's say, that midterm. And then you get in your long-term savings where if you practice this repeatedly, right, you get it into systems, all of a sudden you can start to leverage that, right? If you're doing, I don't know, new product introductions and you've analyzed all your previous products, where some of the challenges are, what let's assume you outsource it. What good partners can handle new things versus partners that are really good at scale, right? The zero to one versus the one to N concepts. That would be those three bullets would be what I would talk to the CEO and the CFO.
Yeah, and I think the COVID pandemic, really put supply chain management on the map or on the radar for many CEOs and CFOs, right? Because they probably weren't as educated as they should have been about, the impact and the connection between supply chain performance and financial, performance. And I think that I remember there was some research done, it's probably like 20 years ago, and I think it was done down at Georgia Tech, but I could be completely wrong about that. I'll have to look that up. But I remember they did an analysis of the financial impact of supply chain disruptions and its impact on shareholder price and shareholder value and stock price and all these financial metrics. And the key takeaway is that, it had a real financial impact on companies, number one, and number two, that it took sometimes years to make that up, depending on the severity of the disruption.
Absolutely.
So it definitely has implications. But I think beyond the cost side of things, I think you alluded to this as well, is that there's the top line potential for it as well, right? So if you've got a very resilient supply chain, you can actually grow your market share, increase your customer satisfaction. All these other metrics that go beyond just the cost side of things, because you've got a more responsive, more agile, less disrupted, supply chain. So I think that's a key point there that I think some companies overlook. They look at the financial side of things and being able to reduce costs or avoid costs, but there's also the more strategic view of, hey, this is also going to help us grow our market share and increase our sales and so forth.
Absolutely.
So Gordon, as a way to wrap up, I mean, we could talk about this topic, all day, there's so many dimensions, to it. But I mean, how does a company get started on improving their operational resilience? I mean, what capabilities are required and what lesson can companies learn from the leaders in this area?
Right. So, always like to have 3 points on everything. So, same sort of thing here, 3 points. So, I would say first start with a clear vision of resilience and as that strategic asset, right? So especially if you're going to operate on, let's say, a large transformation within your company, make sure that you have people in your company that agree with this as a strategic asset, right? We're seeing more of it, so it shouldn't be a hard sell, but the first question is start with that clear vision. And then even so, that's your high level kind of approach to start. So make sure you get buy-in from everyone in your company or the influencers in your company, not everyone. So then we need to begin with those target use cases and start with those target use cases to build momentum. There is probably a use case in your business where if you solve that, you'd see a very immediate ROI, right? And the ones from being exposed to a lot more of the, let's say, the inbound logistics problem. What we see there is typically it's, I don't know where my stuff is. And as a consequence of that, I have to expedite. I don't have dock space. I don't have guaranteed inventory. And depending on your business, one of those may be the big thing to attack. So start small so you can showcase that. I would advocate getting a platform that can continue to grow to the next level, right? So you get the strategic view, you start with a small use cases with a clear ROI. And then number three, I would go back to that continuous learning mindset, right? How are you going, like when disruptions occur, as you start to solve these things, how do you get the organization to continuously learn, capture those learnings, and feed those back to the people who are executing the system? And this is one where I would also say, depending on where you are in your organization, right? If you've got control over both supply chain and logistics, some of these things like tying supply chain to current inventory may be within your scope of control. If you just have logistics, you may not have any of insight into the actual on-hand inventory. But it doesn't mean you can't capture inbound shipments and outbound shipments. And you may say, hey, over the last month, I've seen these inbound shipments build up, and my inbound count isn't as big as my outbound count. Planners, do we know what we're doing? And maybe the planners will come back and say, well, yeah, we're stockpiling stuff for this big event, right? Don't you know that at this point it will come out, right? So figure out where that will kind of latch into your company. And using all of these tools will really, I believe, will really impact your ROI. There are clear wins you can make with an operational resilience play.
Yeah, so if I heard you right, step one is really defining resilience. I mean, what does resilience mean to you? What's your vision? What's your desired outcomes? Number two, kind of ground that into something tangible, specifically KPIs that you're looking to improve, whether it's on the cost side, on the service side, on the inventory side. And then number three is that, this is not a one and done type of, like a project. Hey, let's solve this problem that emerged today because of some hurricane or because of something bigger like the pandemic. This is really truly a continuous business process that you have to create that mindset of, resilience is something that's continuous, that we have to continuously work on, continuously analyze, learn from, and have this feedback loop, if you will, so that we're continuously improving our operations. And I think the fourth one that was kind of embedded in there is ideally you would have some cross-functional participation in this with, metrics that cross multiple functions and good communication and collaboration, not only internally, but obviously, externally as well. So Gordon, again, we covered a lot of ground. I think you provided a lot of great food for thought for our audience. So again, thank you for making the time to be with us today.
Oh, my pleasure. We can keep doing this. It'll be great.
Great. Well, we can certainly have you back on the program in the not too distant future to, see how the industry has evolved in this whole area. And
Absolutely.
I want to thank those of you that joined us today. If you're watching this episode on demand, either at the E2Open website or on Talking Logistics, and you've got a question or a comment for Gordon, you can post it there, and I'm sure he'll be more than happy to respond via that medium. Again, thank you for joining us, and look forward to seeing you in a future episode of Talking Logistics. Have a great day.